And welcome to the Reader's Quadrant, an Empyrean podcast. I'm Kelsey.
And I'm Samantha. We are doing a chapter-by-chapter reread and analysis of the Empyrean book series written by Rebecca Yarros. Today we will be discussing chapter 18 of Fourth Wing. We do swear, and we are not spoiler-free.
So, for today's battle brief, after the huge announcement in the last couple of weeks, the news has slowed down. I mean, nothing's going to top the release date and the title of Onyx Storm for a little while.
It's a badass title.
until we get synopsis or stuff like that. Like, nothing's going to top that news.
No.
But we do have a couple. So there was a new Instagram post from Rebecca Yarros with Nightmare by Halsey as the song choice, and it's a picture of her computer screen, and it just says dragon, 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 and then right in the middle it says Zayden, and then it says dragon, 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 dragon.
She's like, gotta get my words in.
So that was funny. Interesting song choice, because I was like, is it a nightmare writing? Is it a nightmare going to the convention? Is it a nightmare, like, something to do with the book? Who knows?
Yeah, because she's self-described as being very awkward for these things. Like, I think in that post she said, I'll be the awkward one on stage. So that's why it's like, doing something like that she hates doing. She does it, but she doesn't like it.
Yeah. And then speaking of the panel, so she was just asked at the panel to describe Onyx Storm using a singular Taylor Swift song. And what she said was, it's very reputation-coded. So, if you know, you know. That's exciting for me. I love Reputation. Cannot wait for Reputation Taylor's version to come out. Sam has no idea what I'm talking about.
No. I like Taylor Swift, but I am not super versed in her catalog.
Well, she has so many songs, so many albums.
Yeah.
But yeah. So, apparently, if you want to get the vibes for Onyx Storm, Reputation by Taylor Swift, the entire album. And finally, exciting news here. Fourth Wing has entered the Sunday Times bestseller list at number one in the UK. Yay!
Yay!
This is with the release of the paperback copy. So it's coincided. I'm sure it's not a coincidence. More people buying it.
Is that a big publication in the UK?
I think so.
Because I don't
know. The Times? I think it is.
Okay, so I think of, like, the New York Times, so I didn't know if the Sunday Times is, like, that level or what it is.
I want to say yes.
Okay. Sorry, UK,
any
I don't know
listeners
your
listeners in the UK, correct us. Correct us if we're completely wrong, but it is my understanding that's a big one.
Okay. Yay!
And, yeah, that's all for Battle Brief this week.
Yep. Also, I could talk this time. So
it's very exciting.
Yeah. It was pretty rough last time, not gonna lie. I mean, it's still not great, but it's better. So
if you guys listen to our Onyx Storm release detail reaction, I'm very sorry.
I'm so sorry.
You had to listen to me drone on and on, and then Sam every so often chime in.
Editing
that was so hard.
I'm so sorry.
It was a short episode, but like every 5 seconds there was either a cough or a sniffle.
I'm so sorry. It was bad, guys. I'll get into it later, but March was terrible. Just gonna throw it out there. So
did you fall for any April Fool's pranks?
I didn't have any. We pulled any, one no, for the cat cafe.
No social media ones that you fell for?
Nope. Not this year.
Yeah,
how about
me
you?
Me neither. And normally I am incredibly susceptible to these because I am evidently not very perceptive. but not this year.
Yay. It's a better year. Hopefully it's a good sign that April is going to be a good month. Although it sounds like for both of us, it kind of has gone downhill. But that's okay. It'll get better. Mm-hmm. It'll be fine. So, to recap, last time on Fourth Wing, Violet starts flying lessons, and they don't go so well. And the social hierarchy has been totally upended, and now Imogen is going to be training Violet so that hopefully she stops falling off Tarn.
Yes, so I am starting chapter 18 here, and I warn you guys now, this is a doozy. This is a doozy. It is a lot of chapter. Very important information coming at you. So this will not be a short episode at all. And I think Sam would agree. There's a lot that happens here. Okay. So the opening for chapter 18 is, there is nothing more sacred than the archives. Even temples can be rebuilt, but books cannot be rewritten. Which, LOL. Like, LOL. Considering what we know.
Yeah.
About the books that are in the archives.
I'll get into it a little bit if I have to.
Yeah, and I go into it a lot. So this is Colonel Daxton's Guide to Excelling in the Scribe Quadrant. And this is a new book we're getting excerpt from. So this is our first time reading Colonel Daxton. And his name, or hers, their name, means warrior who conquers great obstacles.
Interesting.
Interesting indeed.
So is this like a companion to the unauthorized guide to the Dragon's Quadrant?
The Rider's Quadrant?
Yeah.
No, I don't think there's anything unofficial about the Scribe's Quadrant.
Fair.
I think everything is very, as they say, by the book.
Yeah, that's fair.
Okay, so we start out with Violet pushing a library cart across the bridge into the Healer's Quadrant and then into the Scribe Quadrant. And how different is this exit compared to her entrance into the Rider's Quadrant across the parapet? It's just so funny to me that there is an easy way to get into the Rider's Quadrant, and then every year they're like, nah, like... I mean, go across this thing of death to get over there.
It's the same thing with the gauntlet. Like, to get up to the flying field and stuff, there's, like, stairs.
Crazy. I just think to Iron Flame, where they're talking to the Griffin Flyers. God. And they're like, do you jump off the cliff and you die? And the Flyers are like, what the fuck?
No.
No?
And there's so much I hate about that whole bit, but we'll get there.
Yeah, so mage lights are lighting the way. And I know we talked about mage lights before, but I seriously can't get out of my head. Like, I always picture these as, like, blue flames that Hermione makes in Harry Potter.
Yeah, just like blue light. Yeah.
And so as Violet's entering the Scribe Quadrant, she notes that the stab of longing she feels isn't as strong as it was yesterday, and she thinks that it won't be as strong tomorrow. So she's starting to feel like she belongs in the Rider's Quadrant finally. And I have to wonder if she would have felt like she was missing something if she had ended up in the Scribe's Quadrant, do you think? Or she would just be so unaware of anything that she was missing out on.
I think she'd be very unaware because she just likes to put her head down in her books and just kind of, she lives by the book, so to speak.
Yeah. Because I think she would be so wrapped up in the fact that she was like her father if she was there that she wouldn't know anything was amiss.
Yeah, because like Jacinia doesn't really know anything until Violet tells her.
Yeah, which we'll get into. So a first year cadet from the squad. Oh my god, I'm you! It's finally back, the Scribe Quadrant.
The Scribe Quadrant. It's so hard.
Oh, anyways, Cadet Pearson opens the quote-unquote vault-like door, which we know comes important in Iron Flame when they, you know, break into the Scribe's Quadrant. And Cadet Pearson's name, super exciting, it literally means the son of Peter, so... Glad we know that.
That tracks. Recently, if anyways, your name ends in son, it's going to be son of somebody.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, so the vault-like door, like I said, is a hint of the security that we see in much more detail in Iron Flame. And Cadet Pearson points out that Violet wasn't on duty yesterday. And Violet thinks that she was having dizzy spells, which she believes was because she wasn't drinking enough water. But I thought this was a really weird detail to point out. Do you think it's something else?
I don't know. I mean, she gets sick anyway.
Yeah, but I'd had dizzy spells all day. No doubt from not drinking enough water, but at least I've been able to rest. That just seems oddly specific to me.
Yeah, I don't know what else it would be, though, at this point.
Unless it's just her getting used to, like, the bond and all that stuff. Like,
yeah, I mean, there's a lot of, like, physically changing with bonding with the dragon besides just, you know, the new lessons and stuff. I mean, her brain basically has to be rewired if you think about it.
Yeah, so that's what I was wondering if was part of that.
Or maybe it was something in the scribe quadrant, because she had been there and then she had to take a day off. Maybe there's something in there.
Well, they have like a lack of oxygen in there.
Yes,
we know that. I'm sure that doesn't help with like headaches and dizziness and stuff. So then she says, she notes this, the archives smell like parchment, bookbinding glue, and ink. And I'm like, this sounds like the dream. Also an awesome candle scent. I wonder, is there anything better than the smell of books? I don't know.
I like the smell of lumber. Lumber and sawdust.
Okay.
I do. I don't know.
I mean, I believe you. It's just...
My dad was a home builder, so, like, I was around a lot as a kid, and I really like the smell.
The smell. Oh, I guess I'm... So, to you, that smells like home.
Yeah.
I just find comfort in, like, the smell of a library or opening an old book. I don't know. It's peaceful.
I think my son is going to be like that, because I moved some books we were just... he doesn't really need anymore because they're a little young and they're ones we don't use. And he threw the biggest fit and I was like, oh no, you're going to be one of those.
Yeah. I mean,
I like, say that with love.
Guys, let me know if you agree with me. Like, is there anything to you? Like, what is your comfort scent, I guess? Like,
what is your amortentia?
There you go. Except not really. Except not really. Because...
Not that intense.
But yeah, what is the most like intoxicating scent to you? What to you smells like home? What brings you? What scent brings you peace? I'm curious. So she thinks to herself, yes, this smells like home. Which, so she associates home with her father. Yeah. That much is obvious. Like, she does not associate home when she smells like a storm or something.
Yeah.
And that's equal parts of her parentage.
She's always been a daddy's girl.
Yes. And as we know, we're going to learn more about Papa Sorengale in book 3. So, will she still be a daddy's girl by the end of it?
Ooh. That's a good question. Also, are we calling him Papa Sorengale or Daddy Sorengale?
Oh my god, Papa. Daddy is weird. Daddy has some weird connotations that I'm not ready to get into.
All right, I'm going to change my notes.
So a woman approaches. This is where it gets exciting, guys. A woman approaches wearing a cream tunic with a single rectangle of gold woven onto her shoulder, meaning she is a first year. Now, the color cream, we're going to get into some imagery and meanings of color here. So the color cream or white symbolizes like purity of knowledge, and then we have, because like that's all, like brides wear white symbolizes purity. And then we have another mention of gold, which, as we know, Rebecca Yarros in these books loves to mention like precious metals, gold, silver, stuff like that. And so that's on her tunic as well. And that obviously means luxury, royalty, fortune, which I found to be an interesting choice for the scribes, because to me, the scribes are kind of like monks almost. Like,
yeah,
they find value in the books only, not in like material possessions.
I think that the rectangle of gold, though, is it's meant to represent a book.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I just thought the color was interesting. I guess the luxury of the written word.
Yeah.
there's richness in knowledge.
That's true.
Stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then there's a rectangle. It's in the shape of a rectangle. So, like, we were just talking about that can be just, like, simply referencing, like, a book. But another meaning of rectangle, it can denote a sense of peace, comfort, and familiarity, which I thought was interesting because I was just talking about how much books smell like make me feel happy and content.
I bet there's a book and reverie candle for that.
Oh, I guarantee you there is. Although I just bought all of the Bridgerton candles from Bath and Body Works because they did a collaboration. So I don't need any more candles for the time being.
Nice.
And so this woman is Jacinia. Finally. Yay! Finally. So Violet signs a greeting to her and Jacinia signs back. And so we learn here that Jacinia uses sign language to communicate because we obviously didn't know that prior to this. Love that. And I love how it's like so not a big deal in the book. It's just like, oh yeah, Jacinia signs hello to me and I sign back. And it's like, that's the only mention. And then we move on.
Yeah. They do that a lot.
Yeah.
Or when I say they, I mean Rebecca Yarros says that a lot in these books. I was just saying, just kind of like how there was a person, I don't remember their name now offhand, but like they used like non-binary pronouns and it was like just kind of used and not like highlighted or anything. It was just, it is.
Which it should be the way it goes in real life.
Yes.
So during this interaction, we do get another mention of eyes here as we are drawn to Jacinia's bright eyes, which I like because, like, she's scholarly, she reads a lot of books, she has a lot of knowledge, she's bright. Like, it just, this one just makes sense. It's, like, obvious imagery.
What color do you think her eyes are? Would that be, like,
For some reason, I think, like, dark brown, like, almost black. That's kind of what I think of.
I thought of, like, a bright green.
I don't think we actually get a description.
Do we get a description of her at all?
She has long brown hair.
Long brown hair, sorry.
Her bright eyes sparkle. So we don't get a description of her actual eye color, but she has long brown hair, we know that much. And I find it interesting that she pulls, like, the tunic from her head, because I would have thought that wouldn't have been allowed.
Yeah.
But who knows? Sorry. We don't know the rituals of the scribes.
I'm looking her up to see if there's more description somewhere of what she looks like.
Okay, so it's noted that Jacinia has to smother her smile. This just shows that she displays emotion that's not tolerated amongst the scribes. Whereas the Rider's Quadrant is almost like pure raw emotion at all times, like you're operating at 100. The scribes are like so repressed, prim, proper at all times. I just thought that was interesting. Two different sides of Violet's personality. I think she would have like died a slow death in the Scribes Quadrant.
Yeah, she would have.
Because she is so outspoken and not afraid of speaking her mind if something seems like messed up, and that is so not tolerated amongst the scribes. And I don't know that she would have anticipated that, because I believe that her father and her mother probably allowed her to speak her mind, like whatever was going on.
Yeah, I mean,
that's just the vibe I get about her upbringing.
And we'll get into a bit in my half, but her father actively encouraged her to like think differently, and which the scribes don't really seem to allow that though in general.
How did he come to be like that? I find that fascinating. I am dying to know more about him.
Yeah, Papa Silmaril, he's a very interesting figure. I don't know if it's because we don't know much about him, if that's what makes him even more interesting, or just what we do know is also interesting. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, there's certain things I need to know. One, was Papa Sorengale murdered because of what he knew? Why did he know about the Venon and the Wyvern? Why was he passing that knowledge on to his children? Another thing I need to know. Violet's silver hair, is that because her mother was attacked by the Venon when she was pregnant, like I've been saying since like episode
one.
Like our Iron Flame predictions. Like, is that the reason why she doesn't have any color in her hair? Like, is that the fever that her mother had? Like, I'm dying to know.
Yeah, because we all know that wasn't, like, there's no way that was just some random fever sickness. Like, there's more to that.
No, once we learned that that was the fever, and at the end of Fourth Wing where we learned that Venin, when they draw their power from the earth, like, it grays everything around them, I was like, okay, there's no way that's a coinky dink.
No. And 100%.
I don't know why I view her as having, like, a darker complexion. Like, dark, long brown hair and then dark eyes. That's just my headcanon as it stands currently.
Go for it. I mean, it's not clear at all. So, she's whatever you want her to be.
Excellent. So, Jacinia is signing that she was lucky to pass the entrance exam because she studied with Violet for the last year. And she signs that she was horrified to hear about Violet being forced into the Riders Quadrant. Violet tells her that she bonded and that she is happy. And that you actually get used to the prospect of constant death. Which I found so funny. But I like the fact that Violet said, like, she's happy. She's actually happy. And she never thought that she would be in the environment that she's in. But she feels like she belongs.
Yeah, because she does.
And I don't think she would have felt that with the scribes. Like, I don't. I feel like she would have felt like a fish out of water with the scribes. Like, once they actually got into it.
Yeah, because, I mean, that line, that thought she has, after all, how could we know how earnest the scribes are about the work, how dedicated they remain if they were to crack a smile? Like, you can hear the sarcasm.
Yes. Yeah, because what we know of Violet is that she is not afraid to go against the grain. No. And, like, from the small bit we get of Colonel Markham doing his, like, teaching of the scribes in this, like, she would have hated that so much.
Yeah. She's also very much a heart-on-her-sleeve type of person.
Yes. Which she can't hide her emotions.
No, and that is not tolerated.
So, apparently, Violet has volunteered for this duty, where she fetches the books for the rider in charge of their library in the Rider's Quadrant and returns the other books all before breakfast every day. So Violet just likes getting up early because she volunteers for, like, breakfast duty, and she volunteers for this before breakfast. Like, I'm shocked we didn't hear about Dane escorting her down to do this as well.
You know, maybe he does. Or he just figures, he probably thinks that the scribes are safe enough. So he doesn't need to worry.
He's like, maybe if I let her go down there by herself, she'll just stay down there.
Oh, I bet you that's it. Yeah.
God, so I hate him. Jacinia asks Violet if she can help her with anything else. And this is the beginning of where things get interesting, folks.
Yep.
Violet asked if the archives have a copy of The Fables of the Baron. Now, we've talked about this book before because Violet was going to bring it with her to the Riders Quadrant, was she not?
Yes, she was. And Mira told her not to.
Yeah, don't. So this is a book that her father used to read her. And Jacinia isn't familiar with it at all. So Violet clarifies that it's not an academic text, but rather a collection of folklore. And we also note that there is no sign for Wyvern or Venin. And I thought that was an interesting detail. So Violet has to spell them out for Jacinia in sign language. Because there's no actual, like, sign for those words. Interesting. I think so.
Is there signs for that in real time?
Sign language? I have no idea. But we don't live in a fantasy world where they could exist.
Yeah, but I mean,
but okay, here's my thing. They would definitely have a sign for dragon, and they would definitely have a sign for magic. So it stands to reason that there should be a sign for wyvern and venin. And I'm sure maybe Jacinia will come up with one.
I'm sure she will. Because we know she survives, so.
I just thought that it was interesting that this lack of knowledge has extended even that far. There's no sign for these. Even if they are made up, like, fairy tale things, there is no sign.
I mean, interesting. It could be that there is and just neither of them know it because they're also 20.
Yeah, but I'm just saying it's not a commonly used thing. So it's like people know, some people know of Venon and Wyvern, but not all of them. Not all the people. That's a similar thing.
Yeah. I wonder if the people of Turandor, if they have a sign for them.
Maybe.
You know, like how every country has its own sign language? Like American Sign Language is probably different than Canadian Sign Language even.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think, does Liam have a sign for it? I don't think we probably ever get to know that.
Yeah, I don't think we do.
Sad. Anyway.
R.I.P.
So Violet... okay, Violet thinks, now that I'm going to be the one wielding magic, I could use a few good folktales of what happens when humans defile the power channeled to them. Once again, interesting sentence. Interesting sentence considering what happens to Vaden.
Yeah. It's also interesting that she thinks that they're just a parable.
Yeah, she has no reason to think otherwise at this point.
Yeah.
So Violet thinks they were written, yeah, they were written as a parable, warning of the dangers of bonding dragons. She notes that in Navarre's 600-year history of unification, she has never read of a single rider losing their soul to their powers. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Nowlin, what happened to him? I'm firmly on the train that Nowlin used up all his powers reviving Brennan, and now he is one of the Venon. I am so far on that train that I'm almost getting off at the other side.
I'd buy it.
But, like, I guarantee you it's happened before, because if it hasn't happened, how did the Venon come to be in the first place?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Which I bet, at least I hope, we'll get more of that backstory in the next book. Like, maybe they have to find, like, kind of almost like what they had to do with the wards. You know, you need to go back to how they first started to be able to know how to use or handle it now.
Mm.
Like, maybe they need to look and see how the first Venon was created in order to figure out how to undo it with Zayden. And experiment on it with Jack along the way. I'm like, yeah, let's see if this works. If he dies, who fucking cares?
I am also super curious about the relationship between Jack and Zayden in this next book. Will they become unlikely allies because of their condition?
No.
You sure about that?
Yeah.
We don't know Vaden's personality. We don't know what the Venon has done to our dear Zayden.
Yeah, but we know Jack's. Yeah, Jack's not going to work with anybody. Jack.
Well, this may be true. So anyways, at this point is when Professor Markham, gross, appears and almost immediately questions Jacinia. Ugh, and you can't see me, but I am rolling my eyes. Then he notes that Violet was his star pupil, but she was stolen by the Rider's Quadrant. And now he has no hope of her joining the scribes as she has bonded two dragons, which causes a cadet, Nassia. Nassia, do you think?
I think, yeah, Nassia or Nassia.
To gasp. Maybe. And
I bet it's Nassia, like Nadia.
Oh yeah, good point. Nassia means miracle of God, which I really like.
That's nice.
I just don't like Professor Markham. I don't know why he feels the need to point out that to all the other scribes, first-year scribes that have actually entered the scribe quadrant, that Violet was a star pupil. Like, all you people are shit, basically. And he's immediately, like, mean to Jacinia. And Violet's like, oh, no, Jacinia. And then she says, Jacinia, I cringe. I mean, Cadet Neil Wirt has been most helpful. Like, you can't even call them by their first names, and I hate that.
I don't really think he's questioning Jacinia. Like, I don't think he saw her leave. He just looks to where she disappeared. Like, he just wanted to make sure that she was being helped.
I don't know. I just get the vibes that he doesn't really like Jacinia.
He might not. I bet he might be, like, prejudiced because she's deaf. Although you would think for the scribe that would be a prized trait.
I think it's probably more the vibes that I get, maybe not in this interaction, but, like, later on. It's just, like, Jacinia questions things, and she's not afraid to question them, much like Violet. So he probably doesn't like that.
Yeah.
So this is where we learn about the security system in the archives. Fresh air is limited, like we were talking about, as a part of the fire mitigation system. And apparently, the robes are meant for them to blend in with the tomes as a reminder that no one and nothing is more important than the documents and books in the room. And I said, barf, because half of those books are fake.
Yep.
And yeah, I don't know,
sorry.
I was just going to say, so this is, once again, in complete contrast with the Rider's Quadrant. So with the Rider's Quadrant, we learn almost immediately that the cadets are going in and, like, modifying their uniforms to be more, like, individualistic to the people, like, to the individual people. Like, they're cutting off the sleeves of their shirts and, like, just modifying them to make each person individual. And here it's like, no, none of that. No individuality whatsoever.
Yeah. You're only as important as paper.
Mm-hmm. Less important, I would say.
Yeah. And I don't like Markham basically calling out Nausea in this entire conversation. It just seems like a real dick move. This is what I mean.
Like, he's being an ass. Maybe it's just his vibe. I just don't like. And what we know what he does later on that I'm just... Ugh. So, this is where Andarna sneaks into Violet's head. And she's like, are you sad? And Violet's like, no, I'm just visiting the archives. And Violet tells Andarna that her second home is the right one. And I really like that. Like, she's actually found peace, which is a funny word to say about the Rider's Quadrant. But it's nice. So luckily, after Markham leaves, this is when Justinia appears again. And folks, are you ready?
I bet she planned it. She waited for Markham to leave before she came out.
I honestly wonder, because they are being so dangerous having this discussion where they're having it right now.
And they don't even know it.
I know nobody can overhear it, but people can see, and sign language evidently is widely understood in Navarre and Tirindor, because we meet a bunch of characters who just know how to sign. So it's not like they're being discreet in this conversation that they're having. Anyways.
Right.
Justinia returns, and she said there's nothing in the archives but Wyvern at all. Violet notes now for the readers that the archives have a copy of the original of almost every book in Navarre except ultra rare or forbidden tomes. And she's like, where did her dad get this book? Which is what I'm wondering. Did he write it?
I bet it came from Tirindor.
Oh, yeah, I wonder if he's from Tirindor.
He might be. Maybe that's why he got, after the whole, insurrection and everything. Maybe that's why he got knocked off.
I also so badly want to, so the book is called The Fables of the Baron. We've talked about the Baron before, but I want to know so badly more about the Baron. What the fuck's going on there?
Mm-hmm. Also, Violet notes here that the Venon create the Wyvern.
Yeah.
So that was interesting that she knows that at this point.
Yeah. Well, it's like, if they have actually so much knowledge about the Venon and the Wyvern, but nobody knows it except those who know, right? If you know, you know.
Yep.
So Justinia and Violet chat about the Rider's Quadrant and how Violet looks different and stronger. And Justinia says, but I worry for you, the upticks in attacks along the border, .. .. Obviously, Justinia and Violet don't know what that is, but we know what that is.
Yeah.
So then Justinia asks about Dane, and Violet's smile falters.
Yep.
And she said, that's a story for another day. And that makes me laugh.
Just something else I want to notice here, though. When Violet mentions that they hear about the attacks during Battle Brief, she says that they're ransacking villages high in the mountains. Which we learn even in this book that the Griffins can't go that high.
Yeah.
But apparently she doesn't connect the dots here. Which is fair. She only knows what she's told. But it's just like it's interesting that.
Yeah, and I mean, who's giving the briefings to the writers? Colonel Markham, who's probably passing this information along to the scribes. Colonel Markham, they're both receiving the exact same information from the same source.
Yeah.
So then Violet returns the cart to the library, and she has to make it through the lunch line. So at this point, we learn that Sawyer's signet has manifested, and he is the first one. He's a, how do you say this, metallurgist?
Yeah, that's how you say it. It's an actual word.
Which means he can manipulate metal. And so he says that Dane dragged him straight to Professor Carr when it happened. A fucking course he did.
Of course he did. Like,
couldn't give the guy, like, 2 seconds to, like, sit, breathe, okay. Nope, straight to Professor Carr. And Sam's going to talk more about Professor Carr, but, like, I think we all know what he's like.
Yeah, I like how Sawyer's, I just imagine it, he made his sword just went, like, at a right angle.
I also love the conversation that they're having about the fork. Like, Riddick's like, I'm so jealous. And Sawyer says, you wouldn't be so excited if it meant you weren't sure if your fork would stab into the roof of your mouth.
He's not wrong.
And then they're like, oh yeah, we should get you wooden utensils.
Just in case.
Okay, so going into signets, because this is another important part of these books. Like, holy shit, there's so much going on already, and we're not even on Sam's part yet.
This may be a two-parter.
You apparently manifest your power when your dragon is ready to trust you. And I completely forgot that was part of this process.
Yep.
Which I wonder what that means. So if we think about, we know that Violet's second signet has manifested an iron flame. At what point do you think that Andarna was trusting her enough with that? Because she doesn't have, like, the same reaction. Like, she has a huge reaction when she gets Tarn's power.
Mm-hmm.
She very clearly does not have that reaction in Iron Flame.
I wonder if it's at the end of this chapter when Andarna stops time.
Do you think that makes sense, though? Because she's not really developing the signet for that particular power. Like, that's Andarna's power. Whereas we know the power flows through Violet from Tarn for the lightning. And so I'm just trying to think, like, what moment do you think after Andarna has aged up, does she trust Violet in... Because she's, like, being crotchety in Iron Flame almost the entire time.
Yeah. And I understand what you're saying. However, I mean, we'll get into this, but at the end of this chapter, Violet feels the skin prickling energy comes down her spine and then goes to her fingertips and toes. So it's coming from her, whatever you want to call it, her relic. And so, like, I still think it's there. Maybe. And that it's just going to change when Andarna gets older.
Let's open the question up to our listeners. When do you think Violet develops her second signet, knowing what we know about quote-unquote dragons having to be ready to trust you with the power? Do you think she develops it with Andarna first in this book, like with the power of time, or do you think she develops it at some point in Iron Flame? Because I honestly could go either way. I don't know.
Either way, once maybe we get on a storm and find out what it is, I'm sure we'll look back and be like, oh.
Yeah, my main thing, though, was just, like, it was such a physical reaction when she was developing it with Tarn.
She was also very...
It has to be something way less physical, like, much more mind-based.
I don't know. I mean, with Tarn, too, she was very emotionally charged at that point.
Yeah.
In addition to electricity. You know. Different kind of charging.
So, if you don't manifest your signet before 6 months, then you kind of blow up. Which this apparently hasn't happened for decades, so says Imogen and Quinn. But it is a distinct possibility, which is terrifying.
Yeah. I like how Imogen's like, stop scaring the children.
So the relics of the dragons transferred onto them. So we know the one on Violet's back at threshing is the conduit that lets all the magic into the body, which I thought was interesting. Magic tattoo. So Violet feels a tingle in her scalp. And she says she knows if she turns, she will find Zayden staring at her. So, again, like, second signet use from Zayden? But why?
I still say no. There's no reason for it. It's got to be something else.
Because I thought that was interesting. I was like, why would he be using his ability here? That makes no sense.
Exactly.
So, as they head to flight training, Jack Barlow is yelling in excitement. I knew it would work. What? Like, and so this is in reference to that another cadet has bonded Gleam, whose rider died in the first training exercise. So what do you think that means? I knew it would work. Just the bonding?
I'm assuming so. I hadn't really thought about that.
Like, I thought that was just a weird, I knew it would work. What it?
It's gotta be just, I would assume, just the bonding. Gleen was the one who dropped his rider on the glacier, right?
Yeah, yes. But I was like, I feel like that's just a weird thing.
Yeah. Also interesting that we get this person's full name.
Carolyn Ashton.
Yeah, because I don't think we've ever seen her again.
Nope, definitely not. I didn't even bother going into her name because I was like, I don't think it's important.
So you say now, wait till Onyx Storm.
Yeah. Carolyn Ashton is actually the queen of the dragons. Anyway, so this just shows that the unbonded still have a chance, which will obviously prove important in just a few pages here. And that's the end of my part.
So, to start out here, after the page break, Tarn tells Violet, you only fell about a dozen times that trip. He's so complimentary. And then Violet's not sure if it's a compliment, but she'll take it. They give each other some shit about how Tarn is making it harder during flight class than it needs to be. And Violet bemoans that she never gets to see Andarna. Tarn calls her Silver One again, and Violet tells him that he could maybe call her by her name sometime. Which then says he could call her Violence, like the wing leader. Which I didn't really notice this before, but I don't think he refers to any human by their name.
By their names, yeah.
Like, ever. He refers to dragons by their names. Like, even in the flight lesson, their first flight lesson, he only mentioned the dragon's name and said that his rider is your instructor.
Yeah. This doesn't surprise me about... This might just be, like, a dragon thing. Like, they don't think... Like, they like other dragons, but they don't necessarily really think of humans as on the same level.
Yeah, which makes sense. And Andarna, you know, also tells her, I'm always here. But she's also in the veil, so. I also find it funny that Violet's doing the checks of, like, Tarn to make sure that, you know, he doesn't have anything in his claws and whatnot. And he's just like, I think I would know if there's something there.
Do you think I don't know how to, like, clean myself?
Yeah. And so it was really funny. I wonder if the other dragons, like, need that, or if he's just different. I don't know. I just thought it was funny. Let's see. And then Tarn starts to tease her about the wing leader. But then Dane arrives, apparently very angry. Tarn reacts by growling at him and baring his teeth so much that saliva drips from them. Which is terrifying and gross.
Yeah.
All I think is, like, just dog slobber, and it's just disgusting.
I think of troll bogeys.
Yeah, that too. When I say dog slur, I mean, like, you know how there's those, some of those dogs that, like, have where it's just, like,
constantly drooling.
Yeah, like that. Barf.
Like your Basset Hounds and stuff like that.
Ugh. Yeah. Like some bulldogs do, too.
Yeah.
Does Gilbert?
Nope. Nope, he's That's not a good. Drooler.
That's good. My dog's not a drooler either. Which I appreciate. My cat drools. But my dog doesn't. My cat drools when she's like really happy, but then if she shakes her head, it gets really gross real fast. So Violet tries to pacify Tarn, who responds by asking her to tell Dane, "If he harms you, I'll scorch the ground where he stands." And I love that he's so protective already. It's cute. Violet paraphrases that to Dane, and then Dane snaps back at her and Tarn. Rude. And Tarn tells her to repeat what he said word for word, which she does with some snark. And then Tarn's like, "I'm hungry. I'm gonna go find some sheep." Dane and Violet hang back to talk, and as soon as they're far enough away from everyone, Dane grabs her elbow and then shouts at her for telling him that she can't keep her seat. Because he's a fucking asshole. Like, it's one thing to shout, but, like, to actually, like, grab her like that? Come on, dude. Violet, like, rips her arm out, and Tarn growls about it. Which, can't blame him. He's really pissed.
I hate this line from Dane. "All this time, I've been letting Kyuri teach you."
Oh, yeah. Yep. I was gonna mention that, too. And I was just like, bitch, you don't let Kaori do shit. You don't let Kaori. Jesus, how arrogant is he? Like, come on.
Like, you also don't let Violet, like, fly or do any, like, ugh.
And I like, though, how Violet, like, rips into him. And she's just like, well, maybe you should keep better tabs in your squad.
Yeah.
She's not wrong. He's like, well, you didn't tell me yourself, because he's such a little bitch boy. So they keep arguing, and Violet keeps pushing back and fighting him, which, good for her. She doesn't need his negativity in her life. And then the topic of Amber comes up. Because apparently Amber yelled at Dane for an hour about Violet and her completion of the gauntlet. In fact, according to apparently she feels that Violet acted dishonorably. Which, okay. And then Violet calls Dane out for just taking Amber's word and not even talking to her, which he does again later.
Yep.
I just don't get it. Like, because he used to fuck her, he just listens to her? Like, what the fuck? It's very frustrating. And then Dane's like, well, she's a wing leader. Yeah. Okay. And then, but really pissed me off, then he says to Violet, fine, you made it up. Like, she made up the codex or something.
And he's like, don't get me wrong, I couldn't stand myself if something happened to you. This is, we know this is not true because Zayden literally asked him. He said, like, if you were there and you saw that she was going to get murdered by Jack and Orin and Tynan, would you have done anything? And he was like, nah.
No, he still wouldn't. He wouldn't be able to stand it, but he wouldn't do anything.
Yeah.
He would just hate himself forever. And then he keeps whining. And then he says that he's terrified that Violet's not going to make it to graduation. And then she just starts laughing at him, which is amazing.
Isn't this the easy part of being a rider? Like, does he not realize that once you graduate, you have to go to battle?
And then I like how Violet then, I think she's done this before, she quotes him back to himself.
Love it.
It's just, this place cuts away the bullshit and the niceties, revealing whoever you are at your core. Isn't that what you said to me? Is this who you really are at your core? My God, I just love that whole... That whole paragraph is just chef's kiss. It's amazing how much she just rips into him and then just cuts him out of her life.
Yep.
She's like, you know what? You're some of the bullshit that I'm going to cut. So, bye, Felicia. And then she just walks off. Doesn't even to look back. total baller move. It's just so
cool. Guys don't look at explosions.
Exactly. And she's just so riled up as she enters the courtyard. She sees Zayden and then just promptly flips him off for like no reason. He didn't even do anything. He just raised an eyebrow, just like, what the fuck? She just.
I think he would have found that highly amusing.
Oh, I'm sure he did. I bet he probably used his signet there a little bit to like see what the fuck was happening. You know what I mean? I would. So Violet and then Rhiannon start to talk about what happened. And then all hell breaks loose. Poor Jeremiah.
Jeremiah was a bullfrog demon.
Oh, fuck. I forgot to look up Jeremiah's name.
That's all I can think of.
So Jeremiah is a Hebrew name. It means Yahweh loosens or Yahweh will raise or God is high. I just realized I don't actually know if I'm pronouncing Yahweh correctly or not.
That's correct. That is correct.
Thank you. So I'm just like, wait, I don't speak Hebrew. It could be something completely different. So I don't think that really means anything with this character, but there it is. So poor Jeremiah. Sometimes
names are just names, people.
That's true. So sometimes I have a friend, Jeremiah. Sometimes I will call him Jeremiah. Jeremiah has just learned what his signet is, and he's a mind reader. But he has no control and just starts speaking the thoughts of whoever he's focused on in that person's voice, too. Which I find kind of funny in a way, the speaking in their voice part.
Oh, I didn't even realize that.
Yep.
The impression is uncanny. Oof. But I love that Zayden has moved, just putting himself in front of her.
I love that too. It's very sweet. Because he does it in such a way where it's like not super obvious too. Because she says that he's moved casually, putting himself just ahead of her.
Yeah, and his shadow are moving too. Shadow moves to my left.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yes. So Violet tells us that being a Violet then tells us that being a mind reader is called being an intrinsic, which is how I'm going to pronounce it.
Yep, good choice.
So I watched our good friend Maureen's video for this one, and she says that intrinsic, as far as she can tell, comes from two words. A Gaelic word and an English word. The Gaelic word is eachine. That's what I'm going with. I am trying. Which means mind. And the English word, she thinks that it's also in there, is intrinsic. Which means belonging to the essential nature or constitution of a thing. That's from Merriam-Webster. Huh. So basically, it's your mind being part of your essential nature or... like, minds in general being part of your essential nature, which kind of makes sense in this application. Because, yeah, like,
I'm just going to let everyone know here, the excessive amount of N's in this word annoys me.
Yeah. It's that's from the I Ching, because the way she spelled it is exactly like that, with the I-N-N-T-I-N-N.
Oh, okay. That makes me feel slightly better.
So that's the Gaelic spelling. I wonder, though, if it were to keep that, if it would be, like, intrinsic instead of intrinsic.
Maybe.
Which I don't hate, honestly. I mean, to my English-speaking brain, it doesn't match, but I kind of like the sound of it. What do you think? Do you like that one better, or do you like the English version better?
I don't know. How does the audiobook say it?
I have no idea. I've never listened to it.
Neither have I.
I do know. I listened to the
Discord.
That sounds good. I did listen to like the teaser part for the graphic audio because I was curious. I do notice they did pronounce Tarn wrong. They said Tarn.
Yeah, that's not surprising.
Yeah. I think I've heard there's a lot of mispronunciations.
I wonder if that'll be corrected now that Rebecca Yarros is getting a Gaelic tutor.
Like, if they'll go back and correct it, or if they'll just correct it moving forward.
Yeah, going forward.
I would imagine so. I kind of think I might use Inchinsic moving forward, because I like that sound better. So, Riddick is then kind of shoved away from Violet, and Zayden takes his place. He's, like, right next to her now. His arm is, like, brushing her shoulder, and she finds comfort, actually, that he's right next to her now. Which is also cute. Apparently she says he smells like mint, and that studies her heartbeat. I personally don't, but if it works for her, go for it. I have a adverse reaction to mint / menthol and whatnot. It's not great. So, Violet then asks Zayden to do something, and he tenses at her request, clearly wanting to do something, but I think he probably feels a little stuck. Like, he wants to, but at the same time, there's really not much he can do. He then tells her to do her mental recitation of facts to keep herself safe, which he's not wrong. Although I don't understand why he didn't just, as he does, you know, a little bit, he didn't just gag him in the first place. But anyway,
I don't know.
Part of what Jeremiah, though, as we mentioned, when he's kind of pointing at people and just saying what they're saying, is he gets to Dane. He's like, is Violet going to hate me forever? Which is really funny.
I hope she does. I know she won't, but...
So then Jeremiah then gets to Garrick, who apparently decides to think about how Jeremiah is going to ruin their smuggling operation to Tirindor. Because he clearly is about to think that.
Yeah.
Frankly, I feel like Garrick should know better at this point, because he's done the rounds on a couple people now, so it's clearly what Jeremiah is doing. Anywho, then Zayden uses his shadows to kind of bind Jeremiah.
Smother him?
Yeah, hold him still and basically just like put like a gag around his mouth so he can't talk. Part of why I thought maybe possibly he didn't do it in the first place was because Zayden thought it was funny that Dane's thoughts were being spoken out loud to everyone. I could see Zayden getting a kick out of that. So, what was I saying? Oh yeah, I was just saying I think that Zayden possibly didn't gag Jeremiah at first because he thought it was funny to have Dane's thoughts spoken out loud to everyone.
But then his own secrets start coming out and he's like, nope.
But Dane's? Sure. Especially with how whiny they were.
Yeah, for sure.
So, after that, a white-haired professor with a large frame. I'm not quite sure if that means he's muscular or if he's fat. You know what I mean? Like, I can see large frame being used both ways.
Large frame. To me, large frame means, like, bone structure. Like, big guy. Just, like, in general, large and imposing.
So this professor approaches Jeremiah, grabs his head, and then breaks his neck, killing him. Which is sad. Because it's not like Jeremiah chose to have this as his signet. And I bet if he had been, you know, trained in it, it could have been really useful for the military. But, you know, they don't care. The professor then picks up Jeremiah's body and carries him away. Which, Violet thinks the professor is surprisingly strong to be able to pick up Jeremiah. Which... to me, it's kind of weird because he had enough strength to break his neck.
I think she's just shocked by it. Like, has she been that close to death? Like, she's been impacted by every single death she's seen so far.
True, but she says that he lifts Jeremiah's body with surprising strength.
Yeah, that is interesting.
So I just thought that was weird. But yeah, maybe you're right and she's just not thinking clearly. So Zayden and Garrick then leave without a word, and Sawyer informs us that that was Professor Carr. So in Scottish Gaelic, Carr means pointed spear, which really makes sense for Professor Carr. We get a lot more of him, you know, later on in the next book too, but he is a very straight and to the point kind of person. So pointed spear, yeah. There's also a Scottish version, which is Kerr, K-E-R-R, which means dusky. So take that as you will. I just thought it was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Especially that there's two different Scottish versions of this name. One Scottish Gaelic, one just Scottish. Next, we move to the new... And now we move to the next big moment of this chapter, even.
Yep.
So, Violet's asleep and dreaming of a conversation with her father. And this conversation is actually pretty important, especially given what we learn in Iron Flame. So, Papa Sorengale is with Violet in the archives, and he's telling her that while first-hand accounts are always more accurate, she needs to look deeper at who is telling the story. Which
is fascinating if you think about who is telling this story.
Yes.
It's Jacinia.
Yes. And also those journals.
Yep.
In Iron Flame. So I just thought that was really interesting. Even like way back in the day, she was being taught that. And then I don't know how old she was when this conversation happened. It just says she's a much younger version. So I just imagine like a little kid voice like, but what if I want to be a writer like Brennan and Mom? Which is cute. But then a familiar, strange voice just shouts, wake. And she's just like, the fuck is that? But then the conversation continues and Papa Sorengale answers that being a writer is not her path. And the scribes have all the real power in the world, which her mother will never understand. Which, I don't know if I totally agree with that. I agree with the part about the scribes. I don't know if I agree with her mother not understanding that.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I feel like Lilith does think that writers are, like, the one true defense that the kingdom has. I wouldn't be surprised that she underestimates the value of the scribes. But I don't know that she trusts them either, so she might just be conscious of that.
I think that she thinks that the writers have, like, they have all the physical power, but the scribes have, they also have, it's like a different kind of power. I think she views them maybe as equal, but just different. Because as she says in Iron Flame, she fell in love with the scribe. Like, she doesn't hate scribes. Or view them as, like, lesser than, per se. So, I don't know. It's a very complicated relationship, I think, Lilith has with the scribes.
100%.
That we'll hopefully learn more about in Onyx Storm, when we learn about Papa. Mm-hmm. I really want to learn about Papa and Lilith's love story.
Yeah, how did that happen?
I bet it's really cute. I hope it is, anyway. All right, so then the voice orders Violet again to wake up, and she finally does. And it takes her a second to first realize where she is, which it's fair. She's having a pretty realistic dream because it was more just a memory. What's interesting is she says that the dream disintegrates, which is kind of, you don't usually hear that word being used with a dream that's like a natural dream. You know what I mean? Like, I would imagine more of a dream being disintegrating as it was, like, an induced type of dream. Like,
this
something
dream
acting
was,
on her.
Yeah, weird, because when Tarn's voice interrupts her, the voice rumbles through the archives. Like, it's part of the dream. So I was like, this dream is strange to me.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't understand why it happened this way, this dream. It almost makes me wonder if someone took a page out of Violet's book and gave her slip something to her to where she would be in this, because when she does wake up, they say, fuck, she's awake. Like, they weren't expecting her to actually wake up.
I think there's something in that, because why would she not awake when there's, like, a shit ton of people in her room trying to murder her? Like,
they can't have been that quiet.
Yeah. I'm shocked that they were able to get in there without her waking up. So I think you might be right. Maybe they drugged her. because we did get an entire lunch scene.
Yeah, and it's also, it's not like Violet to, she usually picks up on things a lot more quickly, and she's like, I'm not in the archives, I'm in my room. Like, she has to, like, reorient herself.
Yeah.
So the whole thing is just, there's gotta be something more to that. So she sees the sword coming at her, and so she tries to roll all the way. She's not fast enough, though, and it still gets her on her back. Luckily, her dragon scale armor protects her. So she's fine, but I bet she's got a hell of a bruise.
For sure.
Ooh. And she's kind of like, how the fuck do they get in my room? Like, they shouldn't have been able to with the locks. Then she notes that there's a total of 7 cadets in her room. Nope, wait, 6. Because Violet recognizes one of them. And that person she recognizes promptly leaves.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Bitch.
So there are. She gets hers. She gets hers next chapter.
It's true. So there are 4 men and 2 women in her room trying to kill her.
Like,
now.
How fucking terrifying would that be?
Oh, definitely. Especially since, like, their rooms aren't big.
Why did they send
especially
so
with
many of them
that
in
many
there?
People.
I do not understand this. Like, could they not just have sent one person with a dagger?
Especially if they thought she was drugged. So, I don't know. Or maybe they all just kind of wanted a shot at killing her because they thought that would get Tarn.
Maybe. They don't know Tarn.
They clearly don't. Clearly. Because Violet's trying to fend them off. We learn that Orin is one of her attackers because, of course, he is. And also, frankly, as we discussed, I think it was last time, he really should be more pissed at Jack than Violet. Because it's really Jack's fault that he didn't bond.
Yeah.
But whatever, you know. I also get why he's pissed at Violet, because she did knock him out. So he also then still couldn't go bond, but...
Yeah, he's embarrassed to be beaten by a girl.
Especially her, because she's, you know, the little weakling, quote-unquote. Violet ends up, she's trying to fight them off. Tarn's yelling at her. She ends up trapped between her desk and her armoire. And then they all rush her. Orin particularly catches her by the throat and just starts choking the shit out of her. Tarn is even starting to panic. And he tells Violet that he's almost there. Violet has no idea who he's talking about because her oxygen-deprived brain can't think. And then one of the cadets there says, finish her. He'll only respect us if we finish her.
Seriously? Mortal Kombat.
I was just thinking, yeah, finish him. Oh, Mortal Kombat. Whoopsie.
Like, it's just so funny to me, these cadets, because it's like, you kill Violet, if Tarn doesn't die, he will kill you.
Oh, 100%. They don't know that, though. They think he's like all the other asshole dragons, apparently. Which, he's an asshole, but not that kind of asshole. When Tarn hears this, he roars with rage. So, definitely not going to work out the way they think it will. I think if they had managed to and he didn't die, he would have scorched them all as soon as he found them. They would 100%. All be just dead. They'll be like, but, but. Orin now has flipped Violet so that he's got her basically against his chest because he wants to now slit her throat, basically. But Violet's feet are on the ground, and he takes his hand off her throat to reach for a dagger, so she's able to kind of at least have a second to kind of catch her breath and get some oxygen into her brain. And her quote-unquote last thoughts are very depressing. She wonders if she would have been strong enough to graduate, to be worthy of her dragons, and if she would have finally made her mother proud.
Yeah, and that's really sad, knowing what we know about how Lilith dies, and she is proud of her children.
She is, and it's like, I truly wish she would have been more open with her children, because Violet would have known that her mother was always proud of her, and would be no matter what. Like, Lilith loves her children. And I think the death of Papa Sorengale, and then presumably being one of the few female generals, because I don't think we see any others, probably just made her be emotionally withdrawn. Because, like, Violet notes, before her father died, Lilith was a much warmer person. Because even back in, like, chapter one, she's like, oh, I see a flicker of my mother, of how she used to be.
Yeah.
So that's just... it's sad. And then, bang! The door flies open, smashing a part of the stone behind it. Violet tries to look to see who it is, but her vision is blinded by a shriek, which I'm not quite sure how that works, but apparently it did, because that's what she says. Violet... never mind. Went back on exit. And then she hears a shout that says, "Mine!" Which is Andarta. And then Violet feels energy rushing throughout her body from her spine. And then everything goes silent. Andarta yells at Violet to move, but Violet's just transfixed by the realization that everyone in the room is frozen in place. Except her.
Dun dun dun!
And that's how we end.
Wild. What a crazy chapter. So many important first things happen in that chapter.
Just a lot.
And now I think you all understand why we didn't want to record that last week.
Yeah, when I was dying.
That would have been bad.
So bad.
Okay, so going into the assembly meeting, we have a couple of questions from our Discord. So Lindsay asks, why do you think the scribes aren't supposed to show emotion? I think, like we were talking about before, like, they want no individuality.
Yeah.
You clamp down on emotion, you clamp down on individuality, you have less people asking questions about anything. I think it's all related.
Yeah, I think their official reason is going to be something about how you need to have a clear mind with the documents or
Yeah, there's no room for emotion with facts, like things like that.
Yeah, they're for their official reason. But I think you're definitely right. The real reason is to keep people in line.
Okay, and then Lindsay also asks, where do you think Zayden was coming from to save Violet? This is an interesting question.
Don't we kind of get an answer to this at some point? I thought we did. Like, he was coming, he was on finishing up one of the smuggling runs, like his back, because he was in his leathers,
right?
Yeah, and I think he was like in his leathers and everything.
Yeah,
he was fully dressed.
Okay, and then Lindsay again. Thanks, Lindsay, for keeping the section afloat. How did Tarn know she was being attacked? If she was asleep, how could he be aware of what was happening in her room?
Very good question.
Okay, so what do you think about Tarn? Okay, so maybe if... okay, so if we're going back to our drugging theory, maybe... so she was in this kind of, like, dream-induced state, right?
Mm-hmm.
But maybe Tarn connects to her more, like, visceral emotions and, like, feelings. So he could, like, sense what was happening. Because maybe her body was aware, but her mind was not.
Maybe. And also, like, he's a dragon. We don't know that they're bond or connected. Like, what the dragons know about their riders is limited to just what the riders are interacting or seeing or whatever. Like,
could Amber's dragon have told him what was going on?
Maybe. I don't know, because... her dragon's reaction during the trial was very sad.
Yeah, but if there's a dragon hierarchy, right? If Tarn is higher up in that hierarchy, maybe she was like, oh, shit.
Yeah, I mean, I think he is, because isn't he one of the ones that kind of keeps her dragon back?
Yeah, so maybe Amber's dragon said something. Because Amber's dragon wouldn't have known that Tarn would kill Amber. I don't know. I think there's several possible reasons. But I think it's mostly... we don't know how the bond works or what it all entails. Like, we don't really know anything about the dragons.
Yeah. And I will say, I don't think Amber's dragon told, because I think Amber's dragon would know that Amber would get burnt.
Maybe. I have no idea. Maybe Scale somehow found out. I don't know. I have no idea. That's a good question. But I think the bond works in mysterious ways.
Yeah. Definitely.
Okay. And those are all... So thank you, Lindsay. Yeah, thanks. If you want to ask us questions for future assembly meetings, please join our Discord. So.
Yes.
In the last week, last 7 days, I have read a grand total of 8 books.
Which is crazy.
A lot of fun. Mostly Bridgerton and like Nicholas Sparks, like those types of books. But still, I've enjoyed myself greatly. And that and March Madness is pretty much all I've been doing and enjoying the spring weather. How about you?
March Madness, because I won my family group. So, whoop, whoop.
Do you win money?
No, we win a candy bar and bragging rights.
There you go.
It's something. I don't think I've ever won in like the history of us doing these, so I'm pretty happy about it.
I don't even want to talk about my brackets this year.
Oh no.
For men and women, bad.
But I haven't paid attention this year though either. Usually I'm like on it and like watching it and everything with my bracket. This year I just didn't because I didn't have the time, and I guess it worked out. So I guess I just need to keep doing it. It's just not watch. Which is a bummer, though, because I love, like, especially the round of 64 and 32, where it's, like, all the games going. That's the fun part. Besides that, just trying to not be dying anymore. I'm so tired of being sick. I've spent my entire March being sick. Last week, it was an ear infection, now. So that sucked. I had to even get a chest x-ray because the way my cough was. Because I think I have a cold on top of the ear infection. And I had like severe pain like in my chest, like my sternum, basically, when I would cough. So it wasn't great. It was clear, by the way, the x-ray. It was fine. So no idea what that was about. Otherwise, just trying to work on getting my continuing ed so I can renew my real estate license done. I have to do 45 hours, which is a lot.
Yeah, it's similar to my accounting designation.
Yeah. Normally it's like 10 or 12, but since it's my first renewal, I have to do the 45. Fun. And just been rewatching Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
I love Brooklyn Nine-Nine. It's a feel-good show.
It is. Although I'm not... I don't really like the part I'm coming up at, though. The part where they meet the, what was her name? The corrupt cop lady.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about. Yeah. And she does drugs?
No, not that one. That one's funny.
Oh, no. Lunch?
No, the one where... The one who gets Jake and Rosa sent to jail.
Oh, yeah. Okay, where they go, like, undercover?
No, like, they really go to jail.
Oh, yeah. No, I know who you're talking about. Because they're trying to act like they're dirty cops, but they're not actually dirty cops.
Yeah, and then she frames them to make it look like they're the actual dirty cops instead of her and her group at the slaughterhouse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so... thank you so much for listening to this episode. We hope you've enjoyed it. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review our podcast wherever you're listening to us. You can find our Instagram at Readers Quadrant Podcast, and you can email us at readersquadpod@gmail.com. Be sure to join our Discord. Like I said, if you wanted to participate in the assembly meeting questions portion, join our Discord. It's a lot of fun. There's been a lot of discussion about Onyx Storm on there in the last couple of weeks. And a link to that will be posted on our Instagram.
Yes. Also, shout out to Morgan and her boyfriend, because I am loving these updates.
Morgan's boyfriend is... They're listening to the graphic audio, right?
Yeah, so they're listening to the graphic audio. I think they're on a road trip. And her boyfriend doesn't really know anything about it. going into it. So she's been sharing some updates of his thoughts, and it's pretty great. So also just a note, we are coming up on when our giveaway is going to be happening.
Yes, yes, yes.
So keep an eye out for how you can enter for that.
Yeah, it will be posted on our Instagram. I'm just waiting on receiving the items for the giveaway. And yes. Once I get those, I'll be posting on our Instagram about how you can go ahead and enter the giveaway.
Yes. Pro tip, you should join Discord for it.
Yeah. This is
just saying. You can do that now. So, like we said, keep an eye out for that. Every listen counts towards when we'll get the giveaway started. So share with your friends. It's going to be great. I am very jealous of the prize, not going to lie.
It does look great.
It looks amazing. Like, I want some of that stuff. So thank you all again so much for listening. And remember, the right way isn't the only way.
Bye.
Bye.
We would like to thank Kevin MacLeod for the use of his song, The Pyre, for our intro and outro music.